Welcome back. My next guest, my first guest, as always, is the great, if not brilliant, Luke Jones, always doing great things, covering all things that are sports here for Baltimore Positive, 1570 AM WNST. Luke, welcome in.
Dennis, how are you, my friend? It's great to talk to you.
You too, my friend. Couldn't wait to talk to you, especially with the latest Orioles signing. You know, I'm still a neophyte when it comes to covering and watching the Orioles. And on the surface, I saw we signed a 35-year-old pitcher. I believe his record was 8-6 last year. At 35 years old, I would think his best baseball is behind him versus ahead of him. Certainly, it's a step towards helping the rotation, but not in the category of Felix Bautista.
Yeah. I mean, this is certainly the kind of move that they were going to need to make for the bullpen. There's no doubt about that. As we know, Felix Bautista underwent Tommy John surgery back in October. He's expected to miss the entire 2024 season, which is nothing new. So we knew all along that the Orioles were going to have to do something as it pertained to their bullpen. When you look at their postseason pitching staff, 25 career saves. Craig Kimbrell last year, 23 saves for the Philadelphia Phillies. And look, I mean, what you said is true. He's 35 years old. This is someone who's had a Hall of Fame caliber career, someone who's going to be in that conversation at the very least. He's a 9-time All-Star, helped the Boston Red Sox win a World Series back in 2018. His best years were early on with Atlanta when, I mean, this guy for a time was the best reliever in baseball. So he's not that guy anymore, and I think where a lot of Orioles fans are taking pause, and understandably so, is seeing how he really struggled in the postseason last year for the Phillies, where in the middle of that series, when it looked like the Phillies were on their way to going, you know, for a back-to-back National League pennant and going back to the World Series, he really lost his command and did not pitch well. And was one of the factors, not the only factor, as I've seen some people suggest, but one of the factors that led to the Phillies falling to Arizona in the NLCS. So there's certainly some volatility. I'll say that there's volatility with any reliever. And the reality was the Orioles weren't going to go out there, even if they could have, even if they should have, even if they have the financial flexibility. They weren't going to sign Josh Hader, you know, who was projected by some to ultimately get a $100 million contract. And we'll see what the numbers fall for him whenever he lands somewhere. So if you're talking about a one-year bridge, if you're talking about a one-year stopgap, if you're talking about someone with closing experience that can maybe have a little bit of a Kyle Gibson-like effect for the bullpen in the same way that Gibson mentored Grayson Rodriguez and Kyle Bradish last year on the way to those two having breakout years, you know, you're hoping that Craig Kimbrell can have some of that effect. But certainly when you're investing a $13 million contract, $12 million, and then $1 million buyout, if they don't exercise a club option for 2025, you're looking for production. And there were things to like. It's not as though he had a terrible season by any stretch of the imagination. A 3.26 ERA, as I mentioned, 23 saves, still has a strikeout rate that ranked, I saw one source indicated, ranked in the top 10 among relievers in Major League Baseball, where we talked about this a lot when Bautista went down in late August last year. The Orioles struggled to miss bats. You know, their bullpen didn't strike out enough people down the stretch, save for just a couple guys, you know, D.L. Hall and C.N.L. Perez on occasion. But for the most part, they were depending on, you know, pitch-to-contact guys, which you don't really want in your bullpen when you're talking about trying to protect late leads. So there's risk involved with this. There's no doubt about this. As I'm working on right now at BaltimorePositive.com, it's interesting that this is the third straight year now in early December that the Orioles have reached a one-year contract with a pitcher. Last year, it was Kyle Gibson right around this time, of course, for the rotation. 2 years ago, it was Jordan Lyles, you know, for the starting rotation. But obviously, the stakes are much higher now. Even last year, there was an unknown as far as, okay, just how good are the Orioles going to be in the season to come? We've seen this team win 101 games now. It's not a case of taking the next step in terms of wins and losses in the regular season. It's now taking the next step in terms of repeating as a division champ, repeating as a team going to the postseason, and much more so, more importantly, taking the next step in October. So from that standpoint, you look at Craig Kimbrell and you say, okay, you know, the postseason track record isn't the best, but this is someone who's been around a long time And if you're the Orioles, and they've had some success with some pitchers that they've been able to quote unquote fix or tweak a little bit, you know, whether you're talking about more so unknowns, but also some pitchers who whose careers seem to be, you know, kind of at a crossroads, and the Orioles have been able to fix them. So, you know, I you certainly don't want it to be a case where they have to, you know, there's the risk that he completely falls apart, which, you know, when you're 35 and, you know, you've struggled late in the season, there's a little bit of concern there. But at the same time, as much as I have concerns about ownership and the business side for the Orioles, I do trust the baseball operation side of very at a very high level. So from that standpoint, you know, I feel good that I think Craig Kimbrel can give them good production. I'm fine with this signing. Am I over the moon about it? No, but I'm not as down on it as I've seen some people be, because, you know, overall Kimbrel still pitched pretty well. But at the same time, if this bullpen's going to thrive without Felix Bautista, yes, Craig Kimbrel's going to have to be an important part of that, and they're signing him to be an important part of that. But it's probably still going to come back to guys like DL Hall if he's not in the starting rotation, Tyler Wells if he's not in the starting rotation, Yennier Cano repeating what he did last year for the Orioles, which was being an all-star setup man. You know, CNL Perez. I mean, go down the list of, you know, Mike Bauman. You know, if he can hone his command a little bit better as he gets more and more accustomed to the bullpen. So I think it's still going to depend on some younger guys. Maybe there's still another bullpen addition to be made at some point here this offseason, but certainly the Orioles are, you know, they placed a $13 million bet on Craig Kimbrel anchoring that bullpen, raising the floor of that bullpen, and, you know, not just pitching well, but also, you know, being someone who gives that group a little bit more of a veteran presence, you know, someone that can mentor some of these younger guys in the way that, like I said, that Kyle Gibson did that for the rotation last year. So, you know, there's definitely some unknown here, but Dennis, anyone who knows baseball will tell you that bullpen arms, you know, save for the all-time greats, you know, the best of the absolute best, volatility is just part of it. And you'll find even some of the best relievers, you know, over the last 20, 25 years, you know, they have their ebbs and flows. They have their peaks and valleys. They'll have some years where, you know, things are up and down. So Kimbrel bounced back last year from a rough 2022. So, you know, you're hoping that that can continue, and you're hoping that the Orioles maybe a couple tweaks here and there, maybe make that command a little, you know, refine that command a little bit, make them a little more successful against left-handed pitcher or left-handed hitters. But overall, yeah, I'm okay with this deal. I don't think it's a home run, but I don't think it's the failure that I've seen some fans kind of panicking over. Yeah, you know, I do kind of chuckle. I mean, you know, we say we want the Orioles to spend money, and I get it. You want them to spend it wisely, but, you know, Craig Kimbrel, among the options that were out there that weren't going to require a multi-year contract, I think you can do a lot worse than him at this point in time.
Luke, I guess if you're like Elias, you have a certain budget that you have to work within. So it's not shocking that they're not going to make a splash signing, perhaps a splash trade sometimes this summer. But you know, you need ingredients to make chicken salad, right? So that and we'll leave it at that. With no disrespect to anyone, but I guess they're going to hope that the young team gets better. That, you know, all these young guys are a year older, more mature. The game has slowed down for them. In the weight room, all these things, and hope that the pitching comes together for him.
And no question about it. I mean, as I mentioned, I was talking a lot about the bullpen. I mean, I will say this much. If this ends up being your big time acquisition and you don't do as much for the starting rotation, which we've talked about it at length. I mean, I love Kyle Bradish. You know, you know, Kyle Bradish earned Cy Young Award votes. I mean, that's how good he was in 2023. I love the upside of Grayson Rodriguez, who, I get it, he was disappointing in his postseason start. You know, I can tell you Hall of Fame pitchers who've had disappointing playoff starts, including Clayton Kershaw last October. But you know, beyond those two, to me, you still want to add another starting pitcher that you can slot into, even if it's not the number one spot or the number two spot, at least in the number three spot, that you can kind of say, okay, if you're talking about the Orioles, the top half of their rotation, you've got Bradish, you've got Grayson Rodriguez, and you've got pitcher X, whoever you're bringing in, and as you alluded to, it could very well be via trade. So, that's still very much something that's hopefully in the cards for the Orioles. If it's not, then you look at the Craig Kimbrel signing and say, okay, is that going to be enough to help the Orioles as the rest of the AL East continues to try to get better? As we saw with the Yankees acquiring Juan Soto late Wednesday night. So, it's not as though the other teams stay the same. And we talk about this same concept with the Ravens and the AFC North, with the Bengals and the Browns and the Steelers every offseason. So you're getting better, you're getting worse. So the Orioles hope that they've gotten better in their bullpen with Craig Kimbrel, but certainly they still have work to do as it pertains to their starting rotation. And I think that's where the focus now shifts, as Mike Elias alluded to Wednesday night as the winter meetings were wrapping up.
And then there's the matter of the lease. It expires December 31st. I saw where the stadium authority said that they're going to go to a month-to-month type of a deal until they get the matter resolved. Again, it's still it'd be nice if they put it behind them now, Luke.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really even know what to say about it at this point in time. I mean, I'll be the first to admit I'm not following the minutiae of that extremely closely as I'm trying to, cover the Ravens and keep tabs on what the Orioles are trying to do on the baseball side. But as we've said now for the better part of a few years, I know Nestor and I have talked about it at length. Dennis, you and I have talked about it at various times. I mean, it's a story until it's not anymore. And John Angelos can continue to offer empty platitudes about, that the Orioles are going to be here as long as Fort McHenry and all of these different things we've heard him say, where his actions, I don't want to say his actions suggest otherwise, but his actions don't reflect what he says, right? He's not backing up what he says. We've seen him be dishonest with dealings with the media over the last calendar year. So until there's a signed lease, yeah, there's not so much for me. It's not so much doubt that the team's going to move, but until this is resolved, it continues to impact everything they do, including on the baseball side, in terms of setting a payroll, in terms of telling Mike Elias what his budget is, in terms of being able to acquire players and re-sign Gunnar Henderson to a contract extension, or Adley Rutschman to a contract extension, or Grayson Rodriguez to a contract extension, or Jackson Holliday. So it's part of the story until it's not anymore. And in the case of what we hear, and John Angelos has talked about this, I mean, the Orioles and Angelos clearly want development rights around the ballpark. And is the state willing to do that? Should the state do that? Would that be a good deal for the city and for the state? And I think that's where, Nestor's talked about this and really sunk his teeth into this much deeper than I have. That's where there are some very fair questions as far as what makes the most sense. I think, this deal, it's important to get it right. It's important not to rush in anything for either side. If they've got to do some short-term leases, I don't know if it's so much month to month, or you sign, a 1-year extension, 2-year extension, however, the structure looks fine, but that continues to be, a part of the discussion, a part of the long-term concern as far as the Orioles being viable and being able to thrive in Baltimore long term. Not so much from a standpoint of believing them in terms of crying poor, but you want to make a deal that's going to make sense for all parties involved. And sometimes that takes time, but I think with everything that's happened, including the publicity, what is now very obviously what was a publicity stunt with the announcement, which ended up being a memorandum of understanding rather than a real lease the night that the Orioles clinched the AL East, when we saw John Angelos and Governor Wes Moore, on the video board celebrating, kind of presenting it as though they had a deal done. And obviously they don't, as we're now approaching mid-December. So, it's something that, I wouldn't expect the casual fan to be paying much attention to. And there's a, as is the case with anything pertaining to government and stadia and all those details, it's not terribly compelling as it pertains to, sports or something like that. But it's very important, and it impacts everything else they're trying to do. So until a deal's struck, it's part of it, and we're going to continue to talk about it. And in the absence of a lease, there's still that, that shred of doubt that, okay, what's going on with the long-term health and prosperity of the Baltimore Orioles?
Well, thankfully and gratefully, Luke, those doubts do not exist with the their NFL counterpart, the Baltimore Ravens. Solid organization, solid ownership, everything signed. No chance of the Ravens going anywhere anytime soon. Not that I think there's a chance the Orioles are going to go anywhere either, but the stability of the organization, I think it's phenomenal. And now 9-3 after the bye, they're getting a little bit healthier, or so it seems. Took care of business against the Chargers, and now we have the Rams coming in as well as weather. One of my colleagues just told me before we went on the air that close to 2 inches of rain are expected, high winds. That doesn't bode well for the Rams' passing game, although the quarterback Matthew Stafford does have a cannon for an arm.
Yeah, I mean, whenever you have weather like this, you never really know what it's going to mean. I mean, certainly for teams that, depend on their passing game heavily, it's something that wouldn't bode well. But when you're talking about heavy rain, when you're talking about the possibility of high winds, which I've seen that, I mean, that wreaks havoc on just about everything. And even talking about the running game, how's the footing of the field, of the field, which from what I understand, I think they put in new sod during the bye week. From what I understand, there is going to be a new field then, which is pretty typical this time of year at M&T Bank Stadium. But in the case of the Rams, I mean, for me, and I think this is going to be pretty pivotal for them anyway. I look at their running game with Kyren Williams. I mean, I think if there's a relative, and I don't want to say weakness because I think that would be way too strong, but if there's a relative softer, not soft spot, but softer spot for this Ravens defense, it probably is their run defense. And we've seen that on occasion, although certainly they cleaned it up the last couple, their last couple games after they had the really bad second half against the Browns back in week 10. But if the Rams can stay on schedule and give themselves manageable third downs, regardless of the weather, which is going to be an unknown and until kickoff. We'll see what the forecast looks like between now and Sunday at 1 o'clock. But if they can get Kyren Williams running the football effectively, that's when this Rams offense, to me, becomes really dangerous because it puts a little less on Matthew Stafford's plate, who I think is having a good season. Obviously, had the injury a little while back, but I mean, you have Cooper Kupp, who obviously has dealt with health concerns, but he's back, he's on the field. And you have Puka Nacua, who has been, one of the great stories of the 2023 season. I mean, if not for CJ Stroud, Puka Nacua would be, the slam dunk offensive rookie of the year. Over 1,000 yards already as a fifth round pick. It's just been nothing short of remarkable. So this is a Rams team that has some firepower. There's no doubt about it. And I think, a month ago, it was looking like this was going to be much more of a layup kind of game. And now I still fully expect the Ravens to win, but that this is still a Rams team that has some good, I mean, obviously they have some Hall of Fame talent on either side of the ball, but they've got some young players who have stepped up and played well for them. So this is not a team that is just going to lay down. They're not just going to roll over and just take the kind of beating that the Ravens are certainly capable of laying on them. I don't think so. I think again, with the weather, running game becomes more important, footing becomes so important, the kicking game becomes much more interesting. So we're gonna have to see how it plays out. But I do think if the Rams, the Rams formula for keeping this game close and having a chance, and Matthew Staff not putting too much on Matthew Stafford's plate, and then the Rams having a chance to hit on some big plays. For me, it really does begin with their running game. And Kyren Williams, he's averaging what, 5.1 yards per carry. He's certainly capable, and it's a Sean McVay offense. You definitely don't sleep on that group, despite the fact that there were such small expectations for the Rams going into the 2023 season.
No, absolutely. And Ravens looks like Marlon Humphrey is going to be a go. Any updates on Justin Madubuike?
He was listed as limited on Wednesday, which indicates he's still in the concussion protocol, so he wasn't made available to talk to reporters on Wednesday in the locker room. But the fact that he was on the field, that lends itself to think you never know with concussion. So let's be very clear about that. We know that that's the caveat that we should all remember, no matter what. But the fact that, you know, they had the bye week, the fact that he's been on the practice field this week should be a good sign for him being cleared in time. You know, we'll get a better indication as we get towards the end of the week. Certainly, you want to be on the WNST Baltimore Positive Text Service sponsored by Coombs Ford of Baltimore for, you know, full clarity on that. But him practicing on Wednesday, albeit still listed as limited, that should be a pretty good sign that he's at least advancing through the concussion protocol and getting closer and closer to being cleared, which would put him on track to be able to play on Sunday, because we know how important Madubuike has been for their pass rush. Having that interior pass rush presence is just, it's been a game changer for this Ravens defense. There's no question about it.
The Ravens also gained some ground by being off right during the bye week, with the Browns losing and the Steelers losing to the Cardinals, and then even the Bengals actually beating the Jaguars helped the Ravens in terms of AFC conference seedings.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, it was a very fruitful week for the Ravens, despite the fact that they're technically no longer in the number one spot going into the week, which, look, it's week 14. There's still a long way to go. But they do still technically control their path to a postseason berth if they would win out, because they obviously have the head-to-head with Miami. I'm not really expecting this team to win out. You know, that doesn't mean they can't go 4-1. But it is a very daunting schedule. There's no question about it. So everything you just laid out there, you know, they've got a full two-game cushion in the AFC North now. I think even through the lens of looking at the Bengals, you know, the Bengals are not out of it, not so much in terms that I feel that they're any kind of a threat to win the division, but you know, as they're playing other teams, you know, whether you're talking about division foes or other teams in the conference, I mean, you know, that gives them a little more juice to keep playing hard and maybe, you know, given that doing the Ravens another solid like they did on Monday night. So, you know, Kansas City lost. You know, Kansas City has a really, really interesting matchup this week with Buffalo. I mean, it's, you know, you look at that game, you're, you know, the Bills, they're 6-6. I get it. And the math is not looking good for them. Anyone who watched the Bills against Philadelphia a couple of weeks ago, I still think the Bills are, from a true talent level, are, I still think they might be a top four team in the AFC. But this is another one of those games where it's like, at some point, you've got to, like, you can't, you know, especially against tough teams, it's, you're not in a position where you can lose a heartbreaker like they did against the Eagles, right? I mean, they looked really good. Josh Allen looked phenomenal in that football game, but they dropped so many games early in the year. And we talked about this with the Bengals as well. You get to the point where you just, the math's probably not going to add up. But the point is, they knock off Kansas City, then, you know, then you're talking about the Ravens, you know, their path to a number one seed improving even more, you know, with if Kansas City drops this game Sunday. So, you know, there's a long way to go, but the Ravens are in such excellent position right now. If they handle their own business, if they can go 4-1, I really like their chances to be the number one seed. I really do. But going 4-1, knowing not just, you know, as we alluded to, the Rams are better than you thought they were a month ago. So, but that's the easiest game left. Then you're talking at Jacksonville, which I'm guessing Trevor Lawrence will probably be back for that game, even though it looks like probably won't play this week. You know, I'm guessing that they're hoping for that scenario. I mean, who knows? Glad to see, by the way, I was glad to see that ankle injury, not that, you know, don't want to see the league continue to deal with it. Maybe it's good for the Ravens, but from an entertainment, from a compelling standpoint, you know, I don't want to see this just war of attrition continue where we're seeing backup quarterbacks playing every week, just in general. But we'll see about Trevor Lawrence, but tough test going to Jacksonville. San Francisco, I mean, everyone's going to be talking about that as a potential Super Bowl preview, and rightfully so. I mean, we'll see. I've said for about a month now, Dennis, that no one in the league's playing better than the Ravens. 49ers are playing better than the Ravens right now. 49ers are playing better than, they're kind of on their own level right now. That's how dominant they've been since getting everyone back. But that doesn't mean they're Doesn't mean the Ravens won't win that night. Doesn't mean the Ravens can't win that night. Doesn't mean the Ravens won't be better when it's all said and done. But that game, then you come home, New Year's Eve. What's the weather going to be like? Because to me, that'll be everything talking about the Dolphins, who, I just talked about the Rams. Dolphins can run the heck out of the football. And obviously, they've got such an explosive passing game. So, if it's 30 degrees and windy, then that's a different story as far as the matchup. If it's unseasonably warm on New Year's Eve, then ooh, who knows what's going to happen in that game. So you have that game, and then after all that, the Steelers come to town week 18. And I get it. The Steelers, Kenny Pickett's out now. Who knows what's going to happen there? Offense is still lousy. Their defense laid a total egg against the Cardinals this past week, but the Steelers have had the Ravens number in the last 3 years. I mean, they just have. Let's call a spade a spade. So if it's coming down to week 18 and the Ravens need to win that game to, whether we're talking about the number one seed, whether we're talking about the division, whether you're talking about wanting to have the number two seed, whatever's at stake in that game for the Ravens, Steelers coming to town, you don't make any assumptions, right? We've seen that movie on either side way too many times. So, long story short, if we're talking about the Ravens on January 10th having the number one seed and a first round bye, and they're getting some rest and they're getting a little bit of work in before players get off their feet that week, they will have most certainly earned it, because that is quite the gauntlet that they're going to have to run here over these last 5 weeks. So, the good news is they're relatively healthy, as we just mentioned, and there's some questions. I still have my questions about this passing game, especially with Mark Andrews' status in flux until at least late in the postseason. There's questions there, but every team has questions, and I think from that standpoint, you feel really good about where the Baltimore Ravens are. But they've got to start fast. Certainly don't want to be sleeping on this Rams team on Sunday, because it's a Rams team that, as the Browns found out, with Joe Flacco at the helm, who played well enough for them to win, their defense really stunk on Sunday. That vaunted Browns defense is really what cost them that football game on Sunday. So from that standpoint, I think the Ravens, and you'd like to think they were paying attention and said, hey, we've got to come out and start fast, be sharp, be ready to play after coming off the bye week, because it's a Rams team that, hey, they're right in the mix in the NFC wild card race as well.
They are. And looking at the division, the Steelers host the Patriots Thursday night, featuring now Mitch Trubisky at quarterback. So they've got a quarterback change, and can't be much worse than Kenny Pickett. The Browns host the Jaguars, and I don't even know who the backup quarterback to Trevor Lawrence is. Haven't even looked that far ahead. And then we have the Bengals, right? The Bengals are hosting the Colts, and the Colts are, we saw they were a decent team when the Ravens lost to them earlier in the season at M&T Bank Stadium, and Jake Browning played very well in the victory against the Jaguars. But anything can happen on any given Sunday with these division games.
No question about it. And to clear up your question, C.J. Beathard is the
Okay.
backup
I had
for
no idea.
Jacksonville. Yeah, and
Thank you.
he actually, I mean,
It's a year of
he
the
did.
backup. It's a year of the backup quarterback. It really is.
It's amazing, right? I mean, that's where, and we've talked about this for a while, and we look at the calendar and we remember where the Ravens were last year at this time. We remember where the Ravens were about to be last year at this time, 2 years, or 2 years ago at this time, where they were about to be going into that Cleveland game where Lamar Jackson got hurt. I mean, Lamar Jackson's the last starting quarterback standing in the AFC North right now. I mean, it sounds like Pickett will be back for the very end of the season, but
Yeah, if you had to
it
bet
just.
money at the beginning of the season who the last quarterback would be standing after 12 games in the AFC North, it wouldn't have been Lamar Jackson.
No,
And
not after
we're
the.
glad that he is.
Yeah, not after the last couple of years, but that right there is a reminder. And you and I talked about this, so we don't need to beat this subject to
Sure.
death. But it's a you talk about it all the time. You play long enough, it's 100% injury rate. I mean, it just is. There are so few players who go through their career without suffering a major injury, or at least some moderate injuries along the way. So, that part's always been a little overblown, but it's also why you need to take advantage of your opportunities. And we talked about this at length after the 2019 season, the way that it ended. And you look at this football team right now. I mean, The Andrews injury stinks. There's no doubt about that. And there's no downplaying that injury. But that said, overall, they are a relatively healthy football team, certainly in better shape than they've been here in recent years. And like you said, you look at the rest of the division. You know, Joe Burrow, you know, Jake Browning, nice story this past week. Bengals aren't doing anything with Jake Browning. They're probably not making the playoffs, let alone doing anything beyond that of meaning. Deshaun Watson, done for the year. You know, Joe Flacco, can he lead the Browns to help get the Browns to the playoffs? Yeah. Do I think a 38-year-old Joe Flacco is going to do what a 28-year-old Joe Flacco did? No, I don't. So, you know, you go down the list. I mean, you kind of look at it, and that's why everyone talks about, obviously, begins with Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes. Tua has stayed healthy this year, and the Dolphins, while I still have very legitimate questions about their ability to beat tough opponents because you look how flimsy their strength of victory is. At the same time, they've got some extraordinary talent. And at some point in time, they might put it all together. And, you know, once you break through, right? You know, every team kind of starts out as an unknown until they break through and win it, you know? So you have those two teams and you have the Ravens with a healthy Lamar Jackson right now. I mean, those three teams right now, you know, Jacksonville, if Trevor Lawrence gets back and his ankle is okay here in the next week or two, then I'll still put them, you know, because they've, if their quarterback's upright and healthy and moving around okay in a couple weeks, then they've got a chance. You know, I saw someone make the comment, I think it was late Monday night after Lawrence left that game, that if you have a decent, if your starting quarterback is decent and healthy, you might be a Super Bowl contender at this point in time. And that's what it feels like right now. I mean, it's
True.
just, it is such, I mean, it's unbelievable the attrition we've seen at the quarterback position in both conferences. So from that standpoint, knock on wood, you know, hold on to your lucky rabbit's foot, you know, cross your fingers, say a prayer, whatever you want to do to try to, you know, hope to contribute to Lamar Jackson's sustained good health. As you know, as we all remember the last 2 years and even remember the scare he had in that Thursday night game against the Bengals. But it is wild. Yeah. To your point, if you think back to August, if someone had told you then that three of the four starting quarterbacks in the AFC North would be injured in early December, two of them out for the year, one of them out indefinitely, I don't think too many people at that point in time would have said Lamar Jackson would be the one standing. So, again, I'm sure everyone listening to us right now, Dennis, are shrieking, saying that we're putting the big jinx on him. But
We don't believe
it's
in
just
jinxes.
reality right now, right?
And, we don't believe in jinxes. We don't believe in the boogeyman. It was nice to hear Lamar Jackson, though, speak. He's matured a lot, right? Speak about the opportunity, what's in front of them. And he referenced 2019 and the lessons learned from that. And he said, I believe, I'm paraphrasing, something to the effect of, you know, if we go this year, doesn't mean we'll ever go again. I mean, it's he understands that the opportunities are fleeting. And you made mention this several times on the show about this group of Ravens, whether it's Lamar, whether it's Marlon Humphrey, and a few others. They've won one playoff game, right? So they need to get in the playoffs and make a lot of noise.
Yeah, I mean, Dennis, let's call a spade. I mean, even John Harbaugh has two playoff wins in the last, you know, since Super Bowl 47. You know, Justin Tucker is the only player left from the Super Bowl 47 team. I mean, that's a long
2012,
timeline. Joe
11
Flacco
years.
was in his 20s then, and Joe Flacco's getting ready to turn 39 next month. So, you know, that tells you how long it's been. I mean,
It's
that's
been
an
a minute.
eternity.
It's been a minute.
So yeah, this isn't just a Lamar Jackson thing, but of course, hey, he's the one making $260 million. The quarterback is at the top of the list. The quarterback and head coach are the two associated with wins and losses, right? We know how that works. I mean, that's the business, right? And that's why the quarterback makes the big bucks. So, but it's not just Lamar. It's all of these guys where, you know, they've had a lot of regular season success. There's no question about that. You know, we've talked at length about Lamar's win-loss record in the regular season, but legacies are defined in January.
Are.
And that's why I said at the time, and I know so many people said it at the time, because why wouldn't you? Because you're trying to make yourself feel better because it was so disappointing at the time. You know, all these sentiments that the Ravens were young and they were a year ahead of schedule and they'll be back. And since then, we've seen what's First of all, COVID happened. No one could have predicted that. And I mean, that was just a global event that impacted the NFL season. Lamar's injuries, the overall injuries they had in 2021.
Sure.
I mean, it's just other guys, you know, getting hurt, other guys moving on, you know, guys retire. I mean, you know, so there's the NFL, we say it all the time, not for long, right? You know, and that's not to say that the Ravens have this window that's closing. You know, Lamar's going to be what, 27 next month. You know, he's still, you know, even if you're of the mind of having some question about how his game will age, you know, with his mobility and whatnot, and that's fair. You know, if you just have a question about that, but even that, you know, 27, he's not 32.
Right.
So, but that said, look at this roster, look at the free agents that are pending. Look at what Lamar Jackson's cap number is going to be starting next year. I mean, that's part of it. It's part of it. That's not a knock on Lamar. That's the cost of having a franchise quarterback. So you do look at this opportunity. You look at the injuries around the landscape of the AFC, and you say, if not now, when? If not now, when is going to be the best opportunity? And yeah, that's why I think there is some urgency. And this team better than any other team in football today that hasn't been to the top, you know, or hasn't gotten to a Super Bowl, let's say, and lost. This team should know better than anyone because of what happened to them in 2019. I mean, they were a great, great football team in that regular season. You know, I mean, we've talked about it. That's best point differential in the NFL since going all the way back to the 07 Patriots, the famously undefeated Patriots until the Super Bowl. And, you know, all these records that they set offensively, and for all the grief that Greg Roman's gotten since then, I mean, that was a historically great Ravens offense, best Ravens offense in franchise history. All of that, yeah, they lost, and they haven't gotten back to that, you know, that benchmark since. Now they've got a chance here. They could be the number one seed. They could be the team that has a first round bye. And look, that's not the end all be all. But you'd rather have that than not. You'd rather have that than have to go on the road and play an extra game just to get to the Super Bowl. So they've got a heck of an opportunity here. But to Lamar's point, they remember 2019. They remember how quickly that evaporated. They were the best team in football until 3 hours later, and they were done. I mean, that's how quick it is. I mean, you know, we talked about this with the Orioles getting swept by the Rangers in a three in a best of five. They got swept in three games. I mean, that's three games that over 4 days. This is 3 hours that it can just be
Done.
over like that. So yeah, you want to take advantage. But part of, you know, part of the task in doing that is compartmentalizing and focusing on this week and knowing that you have to beat the Los Angeles Rams. You know, and Roquan Smith said that, you know, it's all about this week. We can't get ahead of ourselves. We've got a great opportunity. We know that. You know, these guys aren't dumb. They know what the standings look like. They know what the health situation looks like for the rest of the division, and looking around at, you know, much of the rest of the AFC and the NFL for that matter, you know, with some of the quarterback injuries and whatnot. But you know, you can't do all that in one day. You can't do all that in 3 hours. The only thing you can do in 3 hours Sunday is beat the Rams to improve to 10-3. And you do that, you're improving your odds, you're improving your chances, you're leaving yourself less work to do for the remainder of the season to get to where you want to go. So got a great opportunity, but it can end just like that. And I think that's the biggest lesson. Not that there are, you know, there aren't that many guys left from the 2019 team, which is another reminder of how things quickly change. I mean, you know, they're a good number, but it's not as many as you would think, quite frankly, if you go back and look at that roster. So, you know, they certainly have a great opportunity here, but boy, they got to take advantage because on paper, it is going to become more difficult, you know, after this year, you know, from a roster building standpoint.
Well, they have to get hot at the end, Luke. I think that's the lessons that we took away as here in Baltimore. The 2000 Super Bowl team, as well as the 2012 Super Bowl team, there was nothing to indicate at midseason that those teams would walk away with a Lombardi trophy, right? But they caught lightning in the bottle. I mean, in 2000, I mean, they depolarized the offense. And then in 2012, they had the Cam Cameron fiasco. It's going on and a lot of turmoil and Mount McKinney at left tackle or not. And so they put it together. Hopefully this team catches fire, gets hot. the last few weeks of the season, get some momentum about them, then does some damage in the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's what's going to be so interesting about this five-game stretch. I mean, we've talked a lot about the number one seed. We talked about the first round bye, those possibilities. But you look at this team right now, and what they've won six of their last seven. You'd already kind of say that they're pretty hot as it pertains to just looking in terms of wins and losses. So you do look at that and say, okay, they could run the table and they'd be the number one seed and they'd have the first round bye. But then those doubts start to creep in and say, okay, are they setting themselves up for a repeat of 2019? So, is it a case of, you go out to San, for example, and I'm just throwing this out there as one example since you brought it up, but go out to San Francisco, play your hearts out. Maybe you lose on a late field goal or something like that, but that game has a playoff kind of feel to it. And maybe that allows you to recalibrate a little bit. And then you do get hot. I mean, who knows? This is
A lot could happen, but
there's.
do you think that John Harbaugh would do things differently this time? Should the Ravens get a home the number one seed at a first round bye?
I do. I think what he would do is, and I think you have to be smart about this. I am not at all suggesting that you shut things down entirely in week 18 if you've clinched. And the chances of that happening are probably not very likely given, the landscape of the AFC right now. But I think you probably give guys some action. You probably treat it how the Ravens kind of played the finale in Cincinnati last year, right? I mean, they sat out a few of their starters, but other guys played, and they kind of did things that way. So, but I also think that, Dennis, I think that rest versus rust thing also, I think that becomes such a self-fulfilling prophecy. I don't think that's the reason why the Ravens lost to the
No,
Titans.
I don't disagree with you.
I think the Ravens went out there and they played a lousy football game that day. They turned the ball over. They had
They
been so
did.
great on fourth downs, fourth and ones all year, and they got stopped on two of them. Marlon Humphrey gets beat for a touchdown. They let Derrick Henry, kind of push them around.
Field position was an issue. They misplayed a
Yeah.
lot of different things in that game. But again, I would think that they would do things a little bit differently this
I'm
time
sure they
around.
would. Sure, sure.
Again, having lessons learned from 2019, which again was something that really resonated with me, just listening to Lamar Jackson talk about it.
Yeah.
Also, Roquan Smith, Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee. Really glad to see that. I remember when Calais Campbell won it. He actually won the award, I believe, the year before he got to the Ravens. Always great to have these kind of guys in the locker room as well as on the field.
It is. I mean, we so easily forget because of the money, because of fantasy football, because of gambling, just fandom, just wanting your team to do well, whether you're a season ticket holder or someone that just tunes in every week. And, we sometimes forget about there's still humanity to this, right? And these are still human beings. These are still individuals who are fathers, their husbands, their brothers, their uncles, their children to their own parents, and they deal with life things that anyone deals with, regardless of what your tax bracket is. So there's that. There's an opportunity to make an impact that so many of these guys have, and it doesn't get a lot of publicity because frankly, it's I don't think most fans are that terribly interested in who a lot of these guys, what they do off the field. I think a lot of people say they are, and I don't, and I'm not saying that to pick on fans. I think, there's a reason that they're entertainers, right? They're athletes. In the same way that you watch an actor in a movie, you're not really thinking about who that person is, off the set. But they are human beings, and so many of them do so many good things, and so negative attention, off-field issues, arrests, different things like that garner a lot of attention, understandably so. But for every situation like that, there are so many more where these guys make such a positive impact. And specifically speaking to Roquan Smith, someone who's been here just, what, 13 months now, a little over a calendar year, and he's endeared himself to the community. He's done a lot of work off the field. He did a lot of work in Chicago off the field as well, when he was a Bear. So yeah, I think it's important to, at least from time to time, understanding that, yes, first and foremost, their job is to succeed and play well on the football field. But I think it's also important to recognize the work that so many of these guys do. And look, are there cameras involved some at times? Is there social media involved at times with that stuff? Sure, no question about it. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I can also tell you to a man, the number of players involved in the community who don't get publicity for it, don't want
Sure.
publicity for it. And that really says something about these individuals who, yes, they are compensated very handsomely, but they are under no obligation. They are not required to do the things that so many of these individuals do in the community, but they choose to do so. And I think they should be recognized for that properly. So, great to see Roquan Smith be the Ravens, their nominee for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, and see if he wins it. If he does, great. If not, there are 31 other very deserving candidates around the league who, we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, it's important, especially this time of year, as we're approaching the Christmas season and coming off of Thanksgiving, to remember, we're so concerned with 40 times and how many touchdowns a guy throws or catches or runs for, how many tackles or sacks a player collects. But there are guys that are making a far greater impact than just what they do on the football field. There's no question.
Great stuff as always, Luke. Please tell our listeners where they can find you on WNST 1570 AM Baltimore Positive, all the great stuff you do, your blog, and all of your other works.
Absolutely. I encourage everyone to follow us on Twitter at WNST. You can follow me personally at Baltimore Luke. Check out my blog at BaltimorePositive.com, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. The latest on the Ravens. I'll have my thoughts on the Craig Kimbrell signing. But you can check out all of that at BaltimorePositive.com. You want to be on the WNST Baltimore Positive text service, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. Any significant local sports news sent directly to your mobile device, like the Craig Kimbrell signing on Wednesday, via the WNST Baltimore Positive text service. And of course, anything throughout the week on AM 1570 with Nestor. Ravens players and coaches interviews from Owings Mills, post-game reaction from Ravens Rams. Check out all of that at BaltimorePositive.com.
All right, my friend, you have fun this Sunday. You stay dry, stay out of the elements. I'll be looking forward to, we'll all be looking forward to your tweets.
Sounds good, Dennis. Enjoy the game, and we'll reconvene next week.
You got it. There it goes, Luke Jones here on 1570 AM. Baltimore Positive WNST. We'll take a quick break and come back right after this.